Hey, old moles. This is Luisa Martinez taking the opportunity to give some political reflections on my recent trip to Venezuela. I was there for 20 days, and for four of those, I had the pleasure of attending El Congreso Bicentenario de los Pueblos del Mundo, which means the Bicentennial Congress of the People of the World, as a delegate for the Democratic Socialists of America, or DSA. El Congreso was a meeting of socialist parties and leftist movements from 120 different countries, and it was timed in accordance with the commemoration of the Battle of Carabobo, which was the decisive military victory against the Spanish Empire. This represented both a historical and ideological theme for the Congreso. The Battle of Carabobo is today, we kept hearing, reflecting a continuing fight to realize the dream of Simón Bolívar, which is the struggle for independence. In the days of Bolivar, it was Spain, but it was clear that the delegates from every country understood the struggle today was for socialist sovereignty against the United States and against capitalist hegemony. Now, there's much ado in the United States about Venezuela from the right and to a small degree from the left. The criticism from the right is we can dismiss since it's mostly lies, but the criticism from the left is something that we should evaluate within our movement. Now, one reflection is that prior to doing so, the top consideration must be the impact of illegal sanctions by the United States. Now, if I'm being frank, as a leftist, me personally, illegal sanctions are probably the least interesting aspect of the Venezuelan socialist project. But understanding the material and psychological impact of illegal sanctions, what are sometimes formally referred to as unilateral coercive measures, should be the first step in anyone's analysis of its successes or rollbacks. This is something I gained a new understanding of in my conversations with everyday Venezuelans, and I'm speaking as somebody who has been engaged in anti-sanctions work for years. According to a report by the human rights group Sures, the Venezuelan government has lost 99% of its revenues as a direct result of US-backed illegal sanctions. 99%. So if we engage in the exercise of putting ourselves in the shoes of Venezuelans, we can imagine the immense hurdle that they've been presented with when it comes to whether or not gains can be made under the circumstances. As a Venezuelan, would or could your focus be moving forward or simply holding on to the gains that have been made prior to the impacts of US terrorism? From the Venezuelans I spoke to, the answer was unclear. Now, I feel obligated to state this is certainly not an excuse to give a blank check to Venezuela or any state in transition away from capitalism. Internal debates are central to any living, breathing socialist project. But it should give us pause for thought when it comes to the role we can play in the United States. Another reflection was understanding the influence of violence. I spoke to a woman whose father was a very popular Chavista. We discussed the varying levels of political consciousness within the country, and we also discussed how that serves as some explanation for how internal problems have been handled within the socialist coalition that's currently elected. One story she told me was when she was kidnapped as a teen as a result of her father's activism. After those 3 hours were over, she immediately called her father and said, and I'm paraphrasing here for the radio, "Look, I don't know what the hell is going on. Don't tell me, but you need to figure it out." And his response to her as a father was, "Okay, take my car keys and go disappear for a week." Now, not everyone supportive of the transition has parents who have the awareness to explain what's been going on in the country since the revolution. And she said her mother and her father took great pains to do so. So she understood the situation and what happened to her, but also said not everyone within the project responds the same way. Even if betraying the revolution is something she would never do, she has the clarity of mind to be able to humanize the opposition, to understand why a kidnapped daughter of a Chavista might waver in her support. Another thing I'll add, she said rather casually, was, you know, if the right were ever to take control, right, they would kill me, they'd kill my family, whatever. That's an aside. The long-term impact would mean there wouldn't be another revolution in Venezuela for 200 years. And that's what scared her. Another political reflection was understanding the impact of the Guarimbas and the blackouts between 2016 and 2019. Guarimbas were violent protests by the Venezuelan right. People died, and a black man was set on fire and killed in Caracas because his skin color alone signaled to the opposition he was their enemy, which is to say, if he was black, he must have been a Chavista. One person I spoke to was an embassy employee who moved back to Venezuela around the time the Venezuelan embassy in the United States was handed over to U.S. puppet Juan Guaido. Food scarcity in and of itself is one thing that they were dealing with, but the blackouts, he says, are really what scared him. Venezuela went through a series of U.S.-backed blackouts, which were aimed at destabilizing the government. The United States did the same thing in Chile right before the coup that killed Allende. He was explaining it was dark. When you don't have power, you don't have any water because Caracas is a city that's elevated and water has to be pumped up by electricity. On top of that, there were the sanctions, so it was very difficult to get dollars. And it was, when you don't have access to dollars, you don't have access to food. And so they were going 6 days, he said, without food, electricity, and water, and there wasn't any money to be found. And he thought, it's only going to be 2 or 3 more days, and people are going to start rioting, not even against the government, but just simply out of desperation, out of necessity. But they didn't. And the reason why is because people understood after 20 years of revolutionary education that this is an economic war driven by imperialism. And because of the revolution, there was a robust culture of mutual aid and helping one another out, so they were able to get through that crisis. This brings me to my last point, which is hope. Now, I want to make it clear, I don't mean to harp on illegal sanctions as a way of portraying Venezuela purely as victims. When we as socialists make the commitment to socialism, we understand that this means we are at war with capitalism and that this commitment comes with sacrifices, including the reality of violence in every form. Venezuelans understand that more than socialists in this country could. And the biggest testament that I can convey about the successes of the Venezuelan Socialist Project was that despite U.S. terrorism, despite the pervasive threat of bloodshed from the far right, there is still a strong sense of hope. This was made salient to me personally when I came back to the United States less than 2 weeks ago. I was, to be frank, really depressed because the United States seemed, in comparison, overwhelmingly bland and colorless. I spoke about my emotional hangover of sorts to a Venezuelan friend, and they responded with this. Revolutionaries are sensitive to any social situation, and for you as a person involved in defense of workers' rights even more. I've never been to the United States, but I have a pretty good picture when I check the numbers. For that reason, I think you are still a little overwhelmed by the experience of your visit. Because in spite of our problems, there is a spirit of self-improvement in a large part of the population. What the subjective challenge will be in the case of U.S. society, I don't know. Possibly at this moment, that is the question that crosses your mind.